Greetings, listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Story Never Ends, the podcast where we reread our favorite books and watch their adaptations. I'm Audrey.
And I'm Tinashe.
And last episode, we discussed the book Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, which is the fifth book in the Harry Potter series. In this episode, we discuss the film adaptation, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. We will share our thoughts on the film, including what we liked, what we didn't like, what surprised us, and some extra little things we think are worthy of mentioning. But before we dive into that, let us get into some Harry Potter news. Yeah, so Tinashe, you can start us off with the latest news in the Harry Potter world.
So I play the Harry Potter game Hogwarts Mystery, and my complaint with that one sometimes is not as immersive as I want it to be. And so I've been seeing news about development of another game. Mm-hmm. Apparently this game actually started a long time ago. Mm-hmm, they did release a PlayStation game earlier on, like, I can't remember which year they said, but this new game has been in development for at least 10 plus years or so. The graphics compared to that first one, so much better. It feels real. It feels real, and it feels like it's going to be so immersive. So it's going to be called Hogwarts Legacy, and it's going to be released this year. They said holiday 2022.
Oh, okay.
So according to, I was looking up, like, what do they mean holiday 22? So around maybe November, December period. And it's going to be released for play on PS4 or PS5.
Oh, okay. So it's limited just to PlayStation. That's the thing I hate about gaming system.
It did say somewhere when I was looking it up that Nintendo is going to have playability access to it. But I don't know if it's the version that's coming out in November, December period.
Might be later.
And so there's like, is it 7 to 10 minutes video on YouTube promoting it and just showing us what exactly it's going to be like. Mm-hmm. So you're going to create your own character and it's any kind of skin. That you can create, so you can actually feel like you're putting yourself in the story. So make it so immersive that you enjoy it. So the story is, this is years and years and years before the Harry Potter comes to school. I think almost like 20 years ago or something like that. I can't remember the exact year.
So is it set before his own parents' time period then?
Yeah. Okay. We're not even touching the Voldemort storyline. Okay. So it's even before the Voldemort.
Oh, so then it'll be way well before.
And so, it touches on the Goblin Rebellion. When the Goblin Rebellion, which is
to be honest, I really don't know when that happened, but okay.
Yes, but it's actually in the stories. In the Harry Potter.
Okay. So it's a bit after Grindelwald, but before Voldemort.
Somewhere there. Cool. So it touches on the Goblin Rebellion, and so you come into school as a student in year 5. So
you don't even start from year 1.
You don't even start from year 1. So you're kind of catching up to where the other students
The spells and everything they're trying to...
You're kind of catching up to where your counterparts are in their learning. So you've got opportunities to raise your skill levels. You'll be using the Room of Requirement. It's there you're going to classes, you're developing friendships and relationships. You can also explore outside of Hogwarts.
Like Hogsmeade and all Shrieking Shack.
All that and other magical kind of sports around the world. You're also able to explore Hogwarts grounds as well. Build your skill level in terms of wand casting and all that. The different types, like the imagery, the graphics and whatnot, it looks so good.
Okay.
Like, I got excited, and I hope it's like that. Of course, probably we're going to have some teething problems. It's a new game coming out and all that, but hopefully it's not too bad that, you know, you're like, you know, this wasn't worth buying.
That's true.
Anything. Yeah. So that's, I was even asking my brother, like, you know, because he was going to JB Hi-Fi, and I'm like, can you check if PS5 is there? He's like, no. actually they're not there, they're not in stock. They did, when they first came out, yes, they were in stock, but not anymore. So I'm hoping by the time, like, there's no point in rushing to buy it now.
Yeah,
the game is coming out later on in the year, and yeah, I'll buy it then. And that's the first time I'm actually buying I usually watch people playing games on YouTube. Yeah. Like, and the stories that I usually follow, it's not just the fighting with no kind of story that kind of draws you in. So I am looking forward to this.
Sort of like, if ever, like The Last of Us and stuff like
yes,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, okay, yes, yes. Cool, yeah, cool, that cool, kind cool. of stuff.
Because
yes,
for me, I'm still debating. I need to buy a gaming console at some point, but I'm debating between PS or Xbox, right? So
yes,
I'll definitely probably do a little research on which platform has more games, or yes, I guess, do they release games that suit both platforms sometimes?
I think so. Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, cool. I think so. Yeah,
but
yeah,
then there's some games that are just exclusive yes, to yeah, a yes, okay, probably, cool. So I guess yeah, I'll check, because things like I don't care about like FIFA and NBA. I don't care less about that. I'm more either a bit of a shoot 'em up, but more adventure, like as in Gods of War and Last yes, of yes, Us yes, and yes, things like that.
There's also Detroit Becomes Human. That one is pretty good as okay, well. I've okay, watched that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I would want to do those, because then you get to come and say, okay, I'm building my story. I go to work, come back home.
Yes,
I continue this adventure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, especially Gods of War, that's been talked about forever.
Yes, like, yes, I've watched a bit of that.
Yep, yeah, and even The Last of Us and stuff like that. But yeah, I think you're right. I think I sometimes enjoy the stories of video games more than I enjoy the actual playing of the video game to get to the.
Yes, I like the play. I know that's gonna happen, and I don't want too difficult of a gameplay or something that I can't get. I used to play like wrestling and stuff like that.
So oh,
I
that kinda, was so good.
Yes, yes. So I kind of get the importance of that. But I also want to be drawn into the story.
You're moving, progressing as a character.
I don't know if it's our thing about like, you know, reading books and stuff, like reading novels. So that kind of plays into it. So I want to be drawn, immersive play.
That's true. Yeah. I think you'll get it. I think, if anything, I've heard a lot about that game, and if anything, Harry Potter games haven't been great. So if they're probably now being pushed out more because of the way the movies aren't obviously coming out anymore. Fantastic Beasts is doing okay, so they want to, you know, they want to get more money and so that's good. That's interesting. I think the only other thing I had was obviously Fantastic Beasts is coming out, and it's coming out on the 7th of April in Australia. I'm not sure where else it coming out, like the dates and stuff. All I'm gonna say about it is I will probably watch it. Maybe not on opening day.
You just say the title.
Oh yes, Fantastic Beasts and what? I don't even know.
Are you serious? Secrets of Dumbledore.
I literally
don't.
And
I'm not the one who even watches this world. Like, so I've only watched the first one and a half.
The thing with it is, obviously, I didn't like The Crimes of Grindelwald. I thought that was just
and
not
that was the
good.
Second one. Yeah,
that was the second one. I thought it was just not good, haphazard. I'm very shocked that JK kind of sat back and said, this is the story I want to tell. I might have been fine if it was a book, but honestly, it being put on the screen, and it shows it being put on the screen not being good, is a testament to it not being good, because you should still be able to adapt something and still get a sense of it being good, even if it's not done well.
Yes,
but it was done well. The effects, everything, the actors, everybody was okay, but just won't talk too much about that. But the third one is coming out. I am a bit about it, because I still think the idea of saying Fantastic Beasts, but then you're having Grindelwald and Dumbledore and everything. Mind you, I still want to see my Dumble Daddy, Mr. Jude Law.
Did you hear that gasp? Yes. Well, like, I did not expect it. She did this with another recording, and I'm like, with the Bridgerton, and I'm like,
Mr. Jude Law, I'm still excited to see him.
Especially when I saw the trailer for the second one.
Yes.
And Jude Law came onto I don't know, that man kind of had a resurgence in his popularity recently, like even when he was in Marvel and... But what else? He's just become hot again.
Exactly. And I was never a Jude Law person. I was like, Jude Law? Okay.
I don't even remember what I've seen
literally
him in that I like. Yeah.
See, I mean, The Holiday, that's like the romantic movie. He's been in a lot of romance movies for me, personally.
And
that's what I've seen.
He was in that one where he was a player, Alfie or something. No, not Alfie.
Yeah, like the Christmas movie or something. Is that the Christmas movie?
Remember the Christmas movie where he's dating a couple of women not at the same time, but he's a bit of a player.
That's how much I didn't really care for his movies.
I'm
not
really sure which movies, but I was aware of him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but and when he became Dumbledore, I was like, okay, cool. We've got
say the way you say it.
Dumbo Daddy. But either way, you know, I'll watch it and we'll see from there how we go. Hopefully, because they're planned 5 movies. I do not know why, but if they're 5 planned movies,
five
they've planned 5 movies. Yeah. So whether this is the halfway point, or they might wrap it up here. Who knows? So we'll see. We'll see how we go. But I don't know. Did you have any other news from the Harry Potter world? Yeah. So I guess now we will just do a quick little breakdown of the movie, or brief background, sorry, on the movie. And then we'll move into talking about Harry Potter, right? I suppose. So this movie came out 2007, release date. Sorry. Director.
Did we say what movie we're doing?
I believe we did. Order of the Phoenix. At the beginning, at the start of this.
Did you actually say Order of
the Phoenix? Yes, I did say the film Order of the Phoenix. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. It's all good. Maybe I should have paused a little bit to give you time to catch up. Oh, sorry.
The rudeness, like.
But this won't be that episode, right, where we just fight and snark. No, I hope not, because that was exhausting for book three. Oh, my God. That was exhausting. Even just listening back, it's like, what?
Anyway, I need to listen to it again. Exactly, okay, continue, exactly. My bad.
No, but yeah, it was released in 2007. I still remember I was in year 7. I was in some year in Australia.
2007, you said. I was in year 12. Yes.
Oh, that came out perfectly then for you. Yeah. But yeah, David Yates directed it, which was going to be him taking over the reins for the rest of the Harry Potter series, including the Fantastic Beasts series. Screenplay was written by Michael Goldenberg, which is different. I think it's usually by Stephen Clover's whatever the name is. So this time he didn't come in for this one. 2 hours and 18 minutes runtime, and it is the second shortest film in the series, but it is based on the longest book in the series, funny enough. Box office, $942 million on a budget of $150 to $200 million. It was the sixth highest grossing film of the time at that time. It was the fourth highest grossing Potter film in the franchise, excluding the Fantastic Beasts and stuff. It was well-received, 77% score on Rotten Tomatoes, but among the Harry Potter fans, it has its fans and critics. You know, some think it should have been two movies so that it can compensate for the length of the book, but then something it did its best to adapt the content of the book, actually stripping away some apparently unnecessary things, although I don't know how you can think anything's unnecessary in the Harry Potter films, I mean in the Harry Potter books. And an interesting fact is that apparently according to Wikipedia, in documents that were released about WB and stuff or leaked, it was revealed that the film lost the company some money, like, and thinking that it made like $942 million, but apparently it lost it about $167 million, which is really weird to think about because it was based on the budget, but I think maybe something like this is not always including marketing and all that stuff. This is usually including to make the movie. Then yes, there's a marketing budget. It's really crazy how much money gets forked into movies, but that was just some little background facts. So yeah, we'll just take a quick break and we'll come in and do the breakdown. Okay, so I guess we're going to start with what our general thoughts were on the film as a standalone and an adaptation. So yeah, over to you, Tinashe. What were your thoughts as a standalone film?
As a standalone, I'd say...
apologies.
Sounds like a gong. Apologies. As a standalone, I'd say that communicating the events of the book to the audience, a general audience per se, I think they did okay. Mm-hmm. But my thoughts are more on the adaptation, especially having read the book as well. There were definitely moments that I wished were in the film. Actually, a lot of moments that I wished were in the film, because especially like, you know, I felt like portraying how alone Harry was during this time.
Yeah.
The effect of Dumbledore not talking to him, the effect of him being the one alone, knowing what happened, few people believing him about what happened in book four, and the response of the rest of the wizarding world. Once again, the wizarding world is at his throat.
Yep.
And so I felt like it wasn't portrayed the way I would have wanted or fully pictured. But the one thing that they did well, Madame Dolores Umbridge, that actress, what's her name? What's her real name?
I always forget her name. Like, literally almost always forget her name.
But she was so good. She deserved an Oscar or whatever award.
Imelda Staunton, that's the name.
She deserved, like, an award because she portrayed that character right down to her horrible core. Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, those were my thoughts.
As a standalone for me, it works. As you said, it's a fun ride through a pretty bleak year. That's what I said, because it is. Book five is depressing as hell, but you know, this movie made it seem more fun than it actually probably would have been. And you know, the montages, the music, the little character moments, they make it pretty fun to watch. But as you said, as an adaptation of the book, it works, but then there are holes, as you said. There are emotions and moments that make the book what it is. And I know some fans, as I alluded to before, it has its fans and its critics. Some fans think, oh, you know, it was good to sort of do away with some of the internal monologue that Harry was going through. But then I'm thinking, that's the core of the story as well for that. Yeah, like, that's his growth phase. Because I think some people are sort of just not missing per se, but perhaps they were forgetting that as a teenager, you do have these weird, angry emotions. And, you know, calling it Caps Lock Harry. Yeah, he's Caps Lock Harry in book five, but that's what makes it fun. Like, well, for me.
Caps Lock Harry.
Caps Lock Harry, let's go. But you needed those extra bits of, like, anger from him to really know what he was going through. Like you said, there were so many factors. We'll get into them. But, yeah, so as an adaptation, it works, but it could have made more of an effort, especially some of those scenes that just, I just cannot believe they just made them so short or just non-existent. You're like, but that was literally what was, God. Anyway, it's frustrating. But, yeah, so I guess let's start with our thoughts on the film, like, in general.
I'm not too upset because I think they were trying to get us right into the meat of the story of what was happening. But the missing moments, like the missing hilarious moments between Harry and Uncle Vernon, yes, maybe they could do away with that. But also the fact how Harry felt disconnected from the wizarding world, that this boy was hiding under the, in the books, he was hiding under the window just to listen to the news. Like, he felt disconnected. He was not getting any. I feel like felt like they could have portrayed that a little bit better in a way. But we jumped right into the scene with Dudley and the Dementors, and we're already moving towards Grimmauld Place with the quickness.
It's almost like a film that was saying, we'll give you what's going on through the aesthetic, right? So he's alone in that park. You feel the sense of that aloneness. And as much as that might be beautiful to portray, I still want that explicitness, right? In the sense, not that I want it to be like he's under the window ledge or anything, but just the fact of seeing him walk through the neighborhood, he's alone. Why is he alone? Like, why? Maybe he's looking through rubbish bins as he was actually doing. And he doesn't actually have to
be under the window. He could be just listening on the side, like, you know, trying to get just news.
Like a montage starting of him.
Montage and getting owls with the daily prophet.
But like, it's just a basic.
Exactly. Yes.
Like, that little context would have just helped for the average viewer. And you would talk to the average viewer and just say, oh, you know, so did you think Harry was lonely? They might be saying but they won't get to the depth
and
of his loneliness.
Only that, so even to the average viewer, like, we just finished the movie four where Cedric died, so you're expecting, for someone who hasn't read the books, so book five, we're gonna start with that, Voldemort is back and whatnot, and you see Harry getting this Daily Prophet newspaper and there is no news of Voldemort. Why is no one reporting on
that? Exactly. Yes. It could have been done in. So, I can already picture, like you're saying, a bit of a start of a montage. Maybe you're hearing. Don't necessarily. Not, I don't know about like over. What do you call it? Like voiceovers. But maybe you're hearing him. Like you're hearing Ron and Hermione read out their letters, like, you know, as if he's reading their letters. Yes, but they're sort of being vague about things and all this.
It then makes that scene when he gets to Grimmauld Place and, like, I've gone all summer without any scrap of news. Oh, damn, the way he hits the scrap of news.
Dan Radcliffe. But, yeah, for me, it's just those little, like, I think I'll start. I actually started my notes sort of saying chapters that were missed, like, completely just missed, right? Quidditch. There was no Quidditch in this movie. Not that some people don't care. Some people think Quidditch is whatever. But for me, personally, the development for Ron is what then gets missed because we miss Quidditch. Very sad. It gets pushed into book six, but by then you kind of already, you need the breakdown that happens for him in book five, as in Ron to anyway, whatever. Quidditch, Valentine's Day completely gets missed out. The chapter where they do Valentine's. I'm not going to go into the gist because I obviously know you might want to touch. I'm just sort of breaking down the chapters that completely get skipped. The HP interview with the Quibbler, or at least Rita Skeeter, you know, St. Mungo's going to the hospital for wizards, careers advice, the destruction of Dumbledore's office at the end, the train scene or platform 9 3/4. And I think the one I'm talking about is when you said at the end, when he, when he gets back home, you mentioned something like that at the end.
Yeah.
None of that, obviously. And just general scenes that were missed, the series of letters that were coming in after he gets expelled, the cleanup of Grimald Place when they, you know, the first time we get to Grimald Place, they're cleaning it up and everything. There are all these little features about it that get missed. Even R.A.B. gets missed somewhere there, you know?
Yes.
Sirius being frustrated, or at least seeing a bit more of his isolation. We just see him in relation to when Harry is at Grimald Place, but there's not as much communication that happens between them where Harry feels Sirius's frustration. Or even the fact that we miss out so much in Grimald Place means we don't get to see Sirius being frustrated or angry.
Also giving Harry the mirror?
No, we don't. So that's just featured somewhere at the end. Do we? I don't remember now. He gives him the photo, but I don't think he gives him the mirror.
But imagine if he gave him the mirror and then the angst at the end, like, you know, I had a way of communicating.
Wait, you don't get that.
When does he find the mirror? At the end of book five?
Book five.
Or in book six?
I can't remember, but he crushes it somewhere and then he I think it's actually book seven, if I'm not mistaken. He's cleaning up his trunk, or it's in book six, he's cleaning up his trunk. He finds the mirror, it crushes, but he keeps peace. I don't know. It's a bit. And then Department of Mysteries, when they go there, some of the rooms and stuff like that. Not that they were like super important, but they just sort of go make the Department of Mysteries look like it's just about the mirror, the prophecies, and that's it. Anyway, so just see chapters and scenes for me that were missed that I would have loved to just see how they play around with that, especially like the fact that they sideline the side characters for the Department of Mysteries battle. We'll get to that later, but they sideline them a lot more than they were in the books, like given the agency to fight and all that stuff. But anyway, let's just, I guess, keep going more for breakdown from start, I suppose, when, you know, we meet Mr. Harry Potter sitting at the place, whatever. What other scenes after that, I guess, do you have commentary on, unless you just went straight to...
I loved the... Like before they go to Grimald Place, when he come when they come to pick him up.
Oh yes,
I like the fact that they kept that Professor Moody part, even though he was never a professor. But also, I love the depiction of Tonks metamorphosis
or something.
Metamorphosis, because I say like I translate Shauna to English. Metamorphosis powers, like the it was something small, which I think actually happened in the book, and I just enjoyed the way she did that and her characterization in that. And to Moody using his stuff to reveal Grimald Place, but
before you get that far,
I
was gonna say, because if you get that far, then it's like I'm gonna backtrack us to listen too much. Yeah. I was just gonna say quickly, I can't get over, you know, the Petunia, like Aunt Petunia.
Yes.
She acts in Killing Eve. So Killing Eve is that story about the assassin.
Oh, yes, I did see. Yes. No, I did. I watched it, just one episode of that.
Yes. And the actress is Fiona Shaw. I can't get over her being silly, because in Killing Eve, she's like badass, you know, leader of MI5 or whatever.
Yes.
What is it called? What's that thing about taking names or whatever and... killing something and taking names. What's that saying? There's a saying when
kicking ass and taking names
or something. Anyway, couldn't think about it. And now I'm not smooth enough for this podcast, but it's fine. And then I was also going to comment, if you remember, funny enough, I said captured the isolation more. I don't think it really captured the isolation more. It's fine. The beginning of One Shirt Harry, I was going to tell you, like, you now need to keep an eye on that shirt that Harry wears, the one with the black band around it. Just keep an eye on it. In book six, it's going to be there. In book seven, it's going to be there.
We
as
do
well.
See so, it at the end of this film.
Yeah.
This film.
This time, they don't really wear muggle clothes a lot, do they? In school.
No, uniform. Compared to movie three.
So, you already touched on the Tonks and stuff, but I just sort of thought to touch on that, because by the time we get to Grimald Place, it's sort of, I've already touched on that. And also the flying scene. Did you comment on that already?
No, I did not.
I was just going to say, for me, the flying scene, maybe because I've listened to the soundtrack so much, it sort of just brings this nostalgia of me studying and listening to the flying scene. And,
Man,
I just want to watch Harry Potter, but I have to study. Yeah. So, yeah, it was just a well done. Yeah, it was all done.
I beg your pardon. Do you mean like you listen to the soundtrack of the flying scene as you're studying?
Not necessarily. I listen to Harry Potter.
Do you cue it?
No,
so that
I don't.
So you prepare yourself, like, you're just starting.
It just comes on. Like, I have a whole, you know, instrumental playlist or whatever, and Harry Potter soundtrack is part of that. And the flying scene.
Just as you're about to sit down to study. Okay.
No.
Right, cool. Okay.
But I was also going to say, anyway, you say your point, because this leads into that as
well. Okay. I think this scene works for people who are watching the movies only and haven't read the books. Moody using his staff to, or stick, or staff, I don't know, to reveal Grimmer Place.
That's not even, what is that?
For someone who's just watching the movies as a standalone, or who's never read the books, it might work, but... Oh my god.
And why would this staff have magic? And why would you just tap? Because that means anybody that has a cane can tap and
do it.
Potentially do it. Trigger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What about Mutis cane or staff reveals Grimmer Place? Because Grimmer Place is under a secret keeper.
Yeah, it's a Fidelis. He should have read the paper. Yes. It would have been even cooler if he was given the paper, then we see it shriveling.
Yes.
And we get the sense of him reading it.
Yes.
And seeing the place being revealed. Oh, yes, my God. Yes. You're right. I didn't even pick up on that.
I'm like, what, did they not use the Secret Keeper books? You know what? Not like, it was totally like...
And that's the problem, right, about the Harry Potter series. Lord of the Rings had the goodwill to have one director, Peter Jackson. So whether you think the books... I've never read the Lord of the Rings books, but whether you think the books are well adapted or not, they had one director. So he knew what he wanted to include at certain points and what he wanted to exclude so that the story could flow thematically throughout, just based on the movies. Like elements from the book and basing it on the movies.
Yes.
I can't remember what other series has had that same, you know, like good luck in terms of being such a long series and having one director.
Yes.
Because what I mean by that is with Harry Potter, because it has had so many visionary directors come into it. People that have different styles. You know, Alfonso Cuarón, he's like all these different things. Yes, Mike Newell, he makes like kids movies. And Christopher...
Yes.
By the time we get to David Yates, he wants to put his mark on it. But then in some ways, the story... And I know screenplay comes into it as well. The screenplay comes into it. But the director just as much has influence on what then happens. Because it's not like the screenplay would say... Moody hits his staff necessarily. Yes, you might say Moody does something, but you as the director then can say, oh no, maybe we do the staff, whatever. But then because of that, we then lose the continuity whereby if they had included the Fidelius Charm thing in there, it would have made sense for us to understand in book 7 why it was so crucial that Peter Pettigrew betrayed the parents because the secret keeper role is so important. Like it's not something you can just give away. It's, you know, so... Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just thought to, it just came to me when you said, oh, secret keeper. I'm like, oh my God, yes.
I feel like
it doesn't even get included. Like if you, and that's where people that watch the Harry Potter movies and us book readers always fight. I think more so than most series, the Harry Potter one is the one that has a lot of contention because a lot of people love the magic that gets portrayed in the movies, but that's not the actual mythology.
It could still of the work world. With that magic, but having done it the book where, like, we can still have it revealing like that.
Yes, we can.
But with them keeping the books in.
Exactly. Because that's the problem, right? That's where we've run into problems with Fantastic Beasts as a series. It has McGonagall coming in 1920 when she probably wasn't even born. Oh, it has, you know, Dumbledore wearing muggle clothes in Hogwarts. For what reason? He would have been wearing robes. Yeah. He always wore robes. He wasn't muggle. He was a muggle lover, but he wasn't a muggle wearer or muggle. Like, he wasn't born like a muggle. He was born... I guess maybe they were trying to portray him as... having turned away from Grindelwald, so therefore he's doing that. But then have Grindelwald wear robes as well, because Grindelwald is fully for the magic. Why would Grindelwald be wearing...
Yeah.
You know, so that's the problem for me. It's plagued the Harry Potter series forever. There's no sometimes continuity enough for me to say, man, if I watch these movies, I will get the theme of Harry Potter. I don't always get the theme.
Yes.
Even the parents, it gets lost somewhere. You know, there's not enough. Like someone said, apparently... Sirius just saying, nice one, James, was enough for them to be satisfied. There's a review that I'll hint at the end.
Yeah.
That was enough for them to be satisfied about his relationship with James. But no, you don't even get anything.
There is a whole freaking scene when Harry arrives to Grimmauld Place where Mrs. Weasley and Sirius get into it.
Exactly.
About Sirius treating Harry like he's James. Yeah. And that kind of also, it's a continuity from, what's about season 4?
Book four.
Because themes of that were also in there of Sirius treating, sometimes forgetting that Harry is not James. Trying to, I don't know, relive his past in the future because Harry looks so much like James. Yes.
Exactly. So yeah. So I guess you continue on with after the house. What happened then?
Aesthetic wise, I just love the way Grimmer Place
looked.
That's
true. It was well done.
Yeah. The books.
Although I always thought, why would the black family go and, like, a muggle hating family or people situate themselves in the middle of a muggle heavy neighborhood. Like, as in, perhaps they were there before, but these are houses that were built quite, not like 1900. They were probably built in like, what? Okay, maybe late 1800s to early 1900s. Yeah. But I'm just sort of thinking,
compared to where the Malfour residence,
you know, like, I'm just thinking they would have had a manor house, I'm sure, probably, the black family, but it's just interesting that, like, that was probably their primary residence, it seems, in London.
Yes.
I guess maybe there wasn't as much of a ability for muggles to, for wizards to have, like, a muggle neighborhood in London.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah.
I just found it interesting.
It would, would have just been this. I wonder how it actually comes up on a map. Is it then, it does not even appear on a map, and so there's this blank space? I don't know how it works.
It's almost like it'll be like one of those where planning has happened and they realize, oh, we named 11 and missed, like, 12, and 11 and 13, but we missed 12.
But
then you can't correct it because of town planning, blah, 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 or something is charmed
and
on
then imagine
town
if
council
now there's
documentation.
A whole town of this. Just this blank spot.
That's true. That's true. Also, that's what you say, as in, like, if there was to be a suburb or town of muggles within,
because I wonder how Hogsmeade or Godric's Hollow kind of appears. Like,
that's,
you know,
true. That's true. You're right. I think that's why then those places can be the way they are, because maybe they're a bit more remote and not as. Makes sense. Makes sense. I like that. Consider, even I like the little character moment when they're walking in and Tonks trips over, like, that. Because she's very clumsy
clumsy. Tonks, that's book.
So
Tonks,
the little, in some ways, the movie, that's what I hate, that I love about it, that it surpasses at those little character moments, which give away enough to be like, that's the character's personality.
And even when she's like, do not call me Nifadora, and her color changes, and then change.
That's but the unfortunate thing is the story for me just, And what about Mr. Creature? Although, does he even come back in book 7? Jesus Christ, I don't even
know. I kind of overlook Creature, honestly.
To be honest, I feel like he's easy to overlook if you are purely looking at it from watching the movie. Mm. But when you then get to book 6 and 7, you'll be like, okay, I really need to kind of review Creature from book 5. Like, isn't
Well, maybe that's intentional, because the way Sirius also overlooks it. But I don't want to give the directors too much credit.
I think they just had to feature some elf and they decided. Anyway, it is what it is.
For me, the next scene was Hermione greeting Harry, the hug thing, kind of reminiscent of the Goblet of Fire hug.
Oh, is that what you're thinking? I'm seeing Emma just always sounds so frantic. Where were you? Oh my god, I'm just like, Emma, just calm down. And it's not so much Emma as in I'm criticizing her acting.
Is that not how she greets him in the book?
The thing is, it's harder to imagine what a book person might sound like, unless
but
it's
you know
written.
Like, wait, and Hermione ran to Harry and embraced
definitely
him,
definitely, like, I think it's more the interpretation in my head is more like, I think I'm also being unfair, because if you remember, I did say when I was listening to the Real Weird Sisters podcast, they always comment about how she always sounds out of breath, like when she's like. And I know that sounds like super mean to say, but if I'm not mistaken, you're right. I'll go back. I do have the book here, number 12.
Damn, like, I'm just looking at it. It's just filled with sticky notes, and it's so colorful. Can you take a picture of that one too?
I did. I put it on Instagram.
Was it this one?
I thought it was this one.
The Goblet of Fire one.
No. This one, I think.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, because this was Goblet of Fire didn't do it as well as this. Oh, I think Goblet of Fire kind of just kept typing somewhere.
Okay.
There was a strange silence. So, like, he's meeting his friends. Oh, yeah, you're right. Harry, Ron's here. Harry's here. We didn't hear you arrive. Blah, blah, blah. You're right. She's got, like, caps lock as well. Oh, not caps lock, sorry. I mean, not exclamation marks.
Oh, okay.
In terms of, like, talking, like, really fast and whatever. Yes. And then Ron is like, let him breathe, Hermione. Blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
So, yeah, I get the interpretation, but it looks funny on screen. That's all I was trying to say. Like, it's a bit like there needs to be a balance, I suppose, but I suppose as a younger actress, that was sort of the best way to portray it. Mm-hmm. No criticism to Emma. I'm not an actress. I could never do what she does. Mm. But it was just more funny to me. I was like, she always sounds so frantic.
Yes. Anyway.
But yes, for you, you obviously noticed the hug, so.
I'm not saying this is fitting. It to be. I've accepted in reading the books, honestly, like, you know, it's been humbling.
To say the least.
It's been a humbling experience. I can see how Harry and Hermione can happen, but from the books at the moment, they do feel more like friends, really platonic love, kind of. Yeah.
I think I was also commenting that they do start setting into their looks. I don't know if you know, like, just being purely aesthetic.
Mm.
But I think Ron looked pretty good in this movie. Yes.
I was doing the rewatch, like, I was just watching before you arrived, and it was the scene when they're in the room of requirement, and he's going to, him and Hermione are about to cast spells at each other, and he's going out, he's on, I don't know if it's the shirt that is kind of untucked under the cardigan or what, like, he looks good.
He does.
I see the twins next. I'm like, they look good. Yes.
Yeah, they, in this movie, they were quite well compared to the hair in book, in book four. Yeah. I mean, in movie four, it was a bit. That was. But then obviously, Gary Oldman, like you already mentioned it, but yeah, Gary Oldman, he just kind of made serious who he is. I know they cast those actors more, like, aged up a bit more. In the books, they're meant to be, like, way younger than they are in the movies. Because in the books, if you think about it, they were 21 when the disaster happened, like, and the tragedy happened. So they would have only been in their early 30s by the time Harry was.
You're saying Gary Oldman looks older than he should
be? Well, Gary Oldman was older than he should be. He was, like, in his 40s going on to his 50s. Gary Oldman is pretty old. Like, not to mention his name.
Okay.
But I think at the time that he got cast, yeah, he would have been at least older than what Sirius would be. But obviously, he looked perfect for the part because Sirius was a convict and, you know, he'd been isolated.
Even the tattoos, those are real, right?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Okay. Yeah. But all I know is, I'm not saying I'm criticizing the casting. I'm just sort of interested in the fact that they aged up the actors, but it worked in the favor of the story.
Yes,
so, And I think that scene you were talking about in
Can you queue up that scene? My bad. Like, I should have said that too.
Which scene?
The Gone All Summer without any scrap of news.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I can find it. I mean, it's a matter of finding it in YouTube, maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure.
I like how sharp his voice is, how snippy he is. Like, you know, I've gone all summer without any scrap of news, haven't I?
Because I would have had to probably do it. The ones I can see are mostly. Oh, there we go. You might be in luck.
If you want it, let's do it.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't go with what I was trying to add.
Yes, let's just mute this because it's going to be an ad. But anyway, what I was going to say in the back, in the meantime, is that the scene when they do the dinner table scene, when everyone is just, first of all, I'm amazed. We've got all these British titans essentially just coming onto the scene and making Harry Potter greater than it is. All these, like, little British titans. Mm-hmm. So, hold on. I'm coming onto the scene now. I'm going to play it for you.
Harry!
I think I hear what you're saying.
We've heard them talking about the Dementor attack. You must tell us everything.
Let the man breathe, Hermione.
And this hearing at the Ministry. It's just outrageous. I've looked it up. They simply can't expel you. It's completely unfair.
Yeah. There's a lot of that going around at the moment. So what is this place?
It's headquarters.
Of the Order of the Phoenix. It's a secret society. Dumbledore formed it back when they first fought you-know-who.
He couldn't put any of this in a letter, I suppose. I've gone all summer without a scrap of news.
We wanted to write, mate. Really, we did.
Only what?
Only Dumbledore made us swear not to tell you anything.
Dumbledore said that? But why would he want to keep me in the dark? I mean, maybe I could help. After all, I'm the one who saw Voldemort return. I'm the one who fought him. I'm the one who saw Cedric Diggory get killed. Harry.
And he did. My boy did.
For me, it's not so much even that, like, the acting was definitely well done for this movie, but I just miss that some points in the books were just not in there, you know. Yes. Even in this scene, if you're then wanting to talk about, from a shipping perspective, the Ginny idea, right? I always say the Ginny element. What would you call, what's a good way to say the Ginny problem, let's just say?
Yes.
The Ginny problem starts from the fact that if you were to look at the story holistically, when Harry starts noticing Ginny is almost in book five, where she's just there in the periphery. She's always there. She's always there. She's always there. So for then the leap to happen in book six for him to like her, it makes more sense book-wise because you've been seeing him noticing her because it's from his perspective at the end of the day. Yes. And he's noticing. There's no need for him to mention her or say anything or notice her if he doesn't need to, because it's Harry's perspective that we're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So then that there begins the Ginny problem.
Mm-hmm.
There also begins some of the issues with, like I kept saying, the continuity of you bring in an idea, then you don't carry it on into the next film.
And it's yes.
Like, so frustrating, but yeah. It's fun. I think, but Grimmauld Place overall, the dinner scene when they're talking about, you know, the weapon and all that stuff. It's well done. Like, can feel the tension.
Yeah,
and it's done well.
And just Harry and Sirius reuniting as well.
Yeah.
Because their relationship in movie four was just through the...
Sorry. That was me trying to take a strap. So
I'm like, what is that? Their relationship in movie four was just through the flu network.
Yes.
So, yep. Especially after the events of book three, movie three, and then movie four is just through the flu network, and then now you see them together. And that was...
No, in book four, they were in person. Remember, they go and meet him at the Shrieking Shack, and they give him chicken.
Oh. No. But in the movie, did they do that?
No, they did. Oh, you're talking about they didn't.
Yeah.
You're like, wait, what? Did I forget something? No, you're right. In the movie, they definitely didn't do anything with Sirius except one conversation through the flu.
Yes.
In the letter.
Yes.
Which is really annoying. Yeah. But for the most part, the first few moments are pretty by the numbers. We don't get certain scenes, but we just get the...
You can kind of just kind of accept it. Yes. Yeah.
And then obviously, he goes to the ministry with Mr. Weasley and his...
Mr. Weasley on the escalators and the turnstiles, like, this man... He's truly a wizard in a muggle world. Like.
Literally. A fish out of water.
And it shows that this is not the usual way he goes into work. Yes.
He's like, oh, is this?
What would have been the usual way he went into work? Why did he
the
go
flu.
That way?
They would just use the flu network.
So why didn't he go
actually,
to the flu?
Actually, not just the flu. He would, I think there's a way they flew. If this is touched on in book seven. When we do book seven, you see properly how they get to work. Because they do it through the toilet. You know, that it's more of... What's her name? JK's humor. I think JK's humor bleeds through the Harry Potter books in the sense that she uses quirky things as methods of travel and all that stuff. And one of the quirky methods is they have to flush themselves in the toilet or something to get into the... toilet in the ministry.
Oh, okay.
In the ministry. Okay. There's like an entrance. But this is also like not the... that's why I keep saying Mr. Weasley's way of entering the thing is different to the way that everybody else might enter. Because I think he just uses the flu directly. But I'm not 100% sure on that as well.
Oh, okay. And was it also maybe because Harry would need to register to enter? Something?
Probably.
Yeah.
That but he wants, yeah, but and also as a visitor, yeah. Yes. You would. I don't think you're allowed entrance because I guess what, the flu network is opened only to the workers or something?
Yes,
who
yes,
knows?
Yes, probably.
Who knows? But I was going to say for you, the Ministry of Magic. How was that for you? Like in terms of,
I found it beautifully depicted.
Yeah.
Like even when I'm playing my game, the Hogwarts Mystery game, and now we have access to the Ministry, and that's how it's depicted in the game as well. I found it beautiful. Yeah.
It was well done. And I remember, like, I don't know if you remember when I was saying, I think we're watching the movie, and I don't think I mentioned it, but do you know the poster of like Fudge? That's in the Ministry. If you if you walk in,
yeah.
At the time, I thought it reminded me of like Big Brother. From 1984, the book. Not Big Brother, Big Brother that we know, although that's inspired so by. But anyway, I thought that's the way. But Big Brother in 1984 is portrayed with the eye. It's not the face. Mm-hmm. So apparently that actually is a reference to Citizen Kane. I think there's a poster or something similar like that in this old movie, Citizen Kane, whatever, one of those classics or whatever. What I found interesting was that's where David Yates was really good. Like, he was good at, like, the little hints, the references. It wasn't just feeling like a movie that was, like, by the numbers. It was moments and moments and moments. And are you okay?
No, my eye was twitching.
I guess it was twitching on the upper lids. You're going to be happy, apparently. That's what.
I've been waiting. Oh. I'm gonna say rich, and I'm like, I'm waiting to be rich. Like,
no,
happy.
You get your
I'm waiting to be happy.
You wait for your Viscount. He'll come for you soon.
Yes.
He'll wait, and then Luscious with his luscious locks. That's what I said.
Do you know what? There's this
Luscious with his luscious locks. I said Luscious with his luscious locks.
It works. That works as well. Because I was watching this. There's this interview on James Gordon. Cordon? mm-hmm. Corden,
mm-hmm.
where Taraji P. Henson, like, you know, comes on and they do this little skit. And so it's Taraji and for Empire, it's Taraji and James Corden.
Yes, Corden.
That sounds weird. I want to say Gordon or something. Yes.
Corden.
Okay. Yep.
You're thinking of Jim Gordon from Batman, but no.
So they're pretending that they've gone on to do an audition, and James' character is Taraji's character, and he's gone to audition for, you know, her cookie, and he's going, Licious! What did I say?
You said her cookie. He's going to audition for her cookie.
I'm kidding.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. I was like, wait, what? He's what? I know you meant to say he's going to audition for her, and then you wanted to clarify her being cookie, but the way you said it, anyway. It's all right, guys. It's all right.
I'm going to leave it. I'm just going to continue. Where were we?
You were saying luscious or Lucius.
Yes.
Or because the guy's name is Lucius from Empire.
Yes. Mm. Lucius Lion. Yeah. Anywho, you're talking about Lucius?
Do you want to say? Oh, no. I just wanted to say, like, his hair. Just Jason Isaacs. Like, if there are characters that when I read fan fiction, I picture as them, it's the Malfoy family.
Yes.
Like, the other characters, even Hermione, I could picture Hermione as something else. Yeah. If she's with the Dramini, pairing.
Yeah.
But the Malfoy family, not so much Tom Felton, though. Not so much that I don't want to picture, but I think it's because Tom Felton, then, if you're thinking of it in the romantic pairing, it's weird for me to be thinking of the actor being that. Mm. But in terms of then their characterization,
yes.
Malfoy family, all the way. Like, yes, I just always see them, picture them, like the way they portray the characters in the film is how I, the extension of fan fiction.
Especially like when I, with Lucius, when they're in the Department of Mysteries and when Harry and crew are there and they're fighting, when they realize that Harry's not just going to hand over the prophecy and they start fighting. The scene when Lucius, in his old Death Eater black smoke glory, kind of lands between the hallway and he's holding his arm out and the smoke is just against his white hair and he just, I'm like, Lucius.
Jason Isaacs.
Lucius.
Jason Isaacs, yeah. He does things with Lucius. But
I was going to say, like, you know how in the book, like, Dumbledore is like, you know, the fool with Zingamont,
whatever they're called, yep,
is here just for underage
magic.
Mm-hmm. And just seeing the visual depiction of it, and I'm like, this is ridiculous.
It is very ridiculous.
It's like, because as you said, that was also in when do we see the
book four?
Scene? Yes,
when he sees Barty Crouch Jr. getting, and
it's not like Harry met with somebody.
Mm. Like in this one, they didn't even really, because obviously that's the problem with of not continuation. In book four, you don't get a sense of that room being the one from book four, or from movie four, I should say.
Yes.
Because movie four room and movie five room are totally different. But had they probably portrayed it as how movie five room is portrayed,
yes,
you might have gotten the sense of, oh my God, what are we doing here? This is where we were in movie four.
Yes.
Problem of continuation.
Yeah.
Because for me, the way that room was, even though it's not exactly probably easy to reset up that room again, but the way it was, like, you know, claustrophobic and like everybody's looking at the prisoner and there's all these files. Maybe they don't need to be all the files, but the idea of being reminded that's a room we were in, that would have been very powerful because this room was totally different. Yes, you get the grandeur of the room. You get all these wizards there, but it's either Mike Newell didn't read book five and then made book movie four, or David Yates saw movie five portrayal and was like, nah, I want to do a different room. Mm-hmm, but either way, you don't have the impact of, this is ridiculous. Why are we in here? And
yes,
you see, if you don't do things like that, you then have a lot of, either you dig yourself into a hole where you have to explain where we are, or you then lose the context. And now people out there just watch the movie, not even getting the sense of like how big of a deal this is, you know, to have a 15-year-old boy tried at like a level that's 15. Death Eaters. 15, yes. But what did I say?
50.
Oh, sorry, my pronunciation there, but it was 15 in my head. Oh, I can't be as bad as you. I can't be as bad as you. I think my thing is really loud. I'm just gonna. Anyway, but yeah, that I just wanted to, like, the impact of a 15 year old boy being trialed at that level that Death Eaters were being trialed at. It's it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. For me, like, from the moment Umbridge speaks, like, in her cutesy voice,
you see, the, like, little giggle. You see, her outfit has, like, a pink on it and everything.
Yeah, the little, sort of in a giggle, like, kind of thing. Like, I'm like, I hate you. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate you. Oh, man.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep, it's difficult. Yes. It's very difficult. Yeah. And I think, yeah, and we'll talk about Umbridge more as we, I guess, progress. But Harry gets left behind. Well, left behind, sorry. He gets acquitted or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start going to the train. And where did Sirius get the jacket? That's all we kept asking in the movie. What he transfigured from the dog.
Yes.
To the man.
Yes. Look at how quickly we really moved. When you're reading the book, it took us a while to read that book. Like, it took me a while to get past that. Like, because...
Remember, we're stuck on chapter 10 or before chapter 10 for ages.
And it takes a long time, the way they move so quickly to, and probably for movie storytelling purposes, probably that worked well than doing all that.
It's unfortunate that you can't have too many montages in a movie, but it could have easily been a montage, but you can't have too many because it then looks that a bit silly. Yeah. So,
Whilst we're at the in the train, I'm guessing this is when it happens. I love the scene of Harry dreaming of Lord Voldemort and him, Lord Voldemort being like
in a suit
at the train station in a suit in his with his face all snake like that. I'm like, hello, Lord Voldemort.
No, you're too much.
No, no,
no. I'm not saying no to you. I'm saying
no.
I'm saying
no.
Wait, I'll let you talk and then I'll say what I was saying no to, because I remember you said there's a fanfic. Anyway, don't worry. That's what I was getting to.
No. I'm not saying for her. I'm saying me as the audience.
Okay.
Watching Lord Voldemort, like him in the suit. He just looks so. I'm like, that man is evil.
Thank you for saying that. Because at first when you said, I was like, excuse me.
No,
I was like,
he looked.
Excuse me.
I'm like, that man is evil.
Mm-hmm.
He looks great, but he's evil.
He looks great in his Dior suit, but he's evil. Yeah.
He's evil. Yes.
That's true.
I was not referring to, and which we are not going to be talking about. That is not for
Exactly. Yes. No, I wasn't even going to say it for pride, but I just was going to say, that's what I thought of initially. And I was like,
Yes.
But either way, then we get to the school and the Thestrals. And once again, continuity. Why is Neville right there and he can't see the Thestrals? He can't see the Thestrals because he saw death in his family as it is revealed in the book. Yes, he saw a death of a character that we necessarily don't see.
Yes.
But
that was importance, his grandfather or something?
The importance of that is showing that Neville isn't just a side character. Because they take moments for him, they give him moments, but it's just really weird.
They give him dopest moments. He doesn't see the Thestrals, but no, he's the one who finds the room of requirement.
And the reason why it's so impactful for him to sort of have this connection with Harry, it's part of that connection they actually have. He might
already,
not. Harry doesn't initially realize it, but they have so many connections and everything. Yes, Neville wasn't orphaned, but he was orphaned because his parents have their minds gone. He doesn't get to be with his parents.
And it's this year when Harry actually learns of their connection. Yes.
And so Neville was born and his mom and dad were gone. Like, their minds were lost to him. He didn't have the same parental relationship. Yes, he had a loving grandmother, but he didn't have that. Then obviously also another connection. I think he also had another connection of, what is it called? Obviously their birth and all that stuff we'll get into. But it's funny to me because I'm like, it's a little detail that didn't necessarily need to be skipped, but if it was skipped, fine for the movie watchers, it's okay. But it's so frustrating from a book perspective because you're like, then it cascades onto this and to that and to that. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Just a question: like, did you like the way the Thestrals looked?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you're right. I think they were depicted well, like from how I imagine.
Yeah, I'm just so sad that we never got Hagrid to actually teach them about them because that's the point of it. Anyway, they cut this, everything. Harry sees them first.
Yes.
And he's thinking, I'm mad for months because of that. And then they do the lesson when Hagrid comes back.
Yes.
And he teaches them about the Thestrals and then he finds out. So that's why I'm saying Neville didn't even need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Because technically reveal his ability to see them later on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but because I was going to say, they could have still had Harry tell him, he's not mad.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously Neville later confirmed that he can also see them, and that sort of like reassures him or whatever. But either way, have the lesson with Hagrid or something.
Yes.
Anyway, just little grievances that I just had that I'm like, And Luna was good. Ivanya Lynch, you know, she's really good as Luna. Mm-hmm. But it's really weird that they made her more aloof than prickly.
Definitely.
Like, she's just more, but she's in the book. I was like, wait, Luna is what? Luna is like literally fighting them back, and she doesn't take shit from anyone.
Yeah, she's off with the fairies or something, however that saying goes.
Literally. Oh, God. Yeah, it was really weird. So Ivanya Lynch, very good casting, but I think they just leaned more into her aloofness than her, the fact that she's can be very prickly when she thinks she's right in her own mind.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
I've talked too much.
We get to the Great Hall, and Dumbledore is making announcements in his speech.
Yep.
And
Michael Gambon, everybody. I just like him as Dumbledore, honestly. Yes, like, I enjoy his portrayal. As much as people are like, oh, Richard Harris. I'm like, yeah, Richard Harris was good, but we got this Dumbledore, and he was pretty good, too. So
I'm not saying you changed your tune, but you
This
when we're watching movie 1 and 2, we can go back. Like, when we're watching movie 1 and 2, this movie works with this. And I don't dispute that, but I wouldn't have mind Michael Gambon just from the beginning, like, you know.
Yeah.
And you're like, and then that Michael Gambon works from that movie 3 and whatnot. Yeah.
For us to go back to the recordings and just hear how much stupid stuff we've been saying over the years. Yeah.
But when back to Dumbledore making the welcome speech,
mm-hmm.
and he announces that Hagrid's on leave. You see Snape clapping his hands.
Alan Rickman, may he rest in peace.
I wonder if that was scripted or that was him just deciding, like, you know.
That's the thing,
that
isn't something it?
That, yeah. You know, Snape would be happy about. Yes, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose on that scene for me, what was most interesting was how we didn't necessarily get Hermione talking too much about the breakdown of, like, Umbridge's speech.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that they showed her calculating in her mind. Like, when she sees...
That's in the books, yeah.
But they kept that in her, literally seeing Umbridge talking. And she's just going, like, what? And then, obviously, at the end, Harry's like, what happened? And then she says, you know, the ministry is taking over. And it shows... I like that they... It wasn't just like Hermione saying it because she's smart.
Yes.
There was a lead up. If you look at her facial expressions,
yeah.
She's squinting and looking and, you know, sort of making those necessary expressions that lead you to say, oh, okay, that's how she made that calculation. Because she is smart. She picks up
on these things.
And Jesus Christ, Miss Umbridge makes Voldemort look like he's not so bad after all.
Man, and like, I'm like, does Umbridge want a freaking lozenge? Because, like... Like, throughout her whole speech, I'm like, die, you freaking mofo. Like, you know, but I also, what a great actress.
Exactly. That's the thing. I think what Umbridge, I don't know if I said this in the book recording, but what Umbridge portrays or what she shows or what I guess JK might have been trying to touch on, what generally you can read in between the lines, at least for me, is the problem with institutional villains. Like, mm-hmm. the people that present themselves as doing the greater good, but technically they're hindering you. So any institutional villain could be, for example, things that cause systemic problems for, like, a particular group of people, like race or gender or, you know, access to things and stuff like that. Like, those are the institutional villains. Oppression. So lo and behold, this one is an institutional villain for kids. They can't advance. They can't progress. She's literally like, nope, you're not going to do any of that. So
she's abusing them.
Literally.
Yeah. I think the next moment for me, I'm like, hello, Dean Thomas. Alfie Enoch.
Oh, my God.
At least this time they actually showed his face when he was talking.
Yeah.
How was your... And that scene, I think, was done well, even with Seamus.
Oh, yeah, Seamus. He was an MVP, actually.
Like, he was talking about, you know, and Harry again, like, you know, I guess your mother is stupid then or something. He says
Your mother must be stupid. Sassy Harry, man. I love when they lean into Sassy Harry, as you said, because he's best when he's insulting people. Because he's like, who are you to tell me what to do? And it shows he comes from a family of bullies.
Yes, trying
to fight that bully. Yeah. You know what's interesting? These actors, right? The problem with being in as part of such a big movie is when you get your moment, you really have to make it count.
Yes.
And the actor for Seamus Finnegan made those scenes count. Like yes. him telling Harry, I mean, whatever he said. And then later when he comes around. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think there's even scenes where we see him sort of like reacting to what's going on and he wants to approach her. I can't remember. There's a scene that I thought I saw. But anyway, okay. he made it count because mm-hmm. he wasn't going to get much more screen time after that.
Yes, yes.
I don't even think he gets many lines after that,
No.
But yeah, he made it count.
He earned his dollar there. Yes.
He definitely did. He definitely did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think before we probably get onto the class. Yep. So this is it for part one, right?
Yep.
Come back part two and continue our discussion of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, because it's about to get really, really bleak. So we'll be back in a moment.